All right, it is game day again. Toronto Maple Leafs in action tonight against the Vancouver Canucks. We'll get all over that as we may get all over Morgan Riley as well here in a couple of moments, joined by Justin Bourne. Bottom of the hour, Mike McKenna is going to stop by. Former pro goaltender, now Vegas Golden Knights analyst. Vegas won their seventh straight last night, beating the San Jose Sharks. We'll talk about the Knights with Mike McKenna towards the bottom of the hour. Meantime, Justin Bourne is actually with us today. Had a little bit of technical issues yesterday, but we're all good to go today, and we're ready to rock, and you're spitting fire already this morning on radio.
I don't know.
Part of me just wants to say, Morgan Riley, go, but I want to channel this down to one specific area. As everybody clamors to quote-unquote fix the power play, what's wrong with the power play? If you could isolate one area, what would it be, and why to you is it Morgan Riley?
Well, I don't actually have a flaming hot like Morgan Riley dislike or anything. You know, sometimes you run the risk of a clip getting, as Elliot calls it, or getting radioed a little bit. You know, it's just that we are looking at a power play unit with tons and tons of tools and tons of talent and wondering why it isn't better. And one of the places that I see it is just there is no unpredictability coming from Morgan Riley. I love something that you have commented on several times, a phrase that I forget who it was who said it to you, Ryan Whitney maybe, but it was about deception and telling a lie when you have the puck.
Give out. No, so I asked Whit, what advice would you give for my kids playing hockey? And they still repeat it back to me all the time. When you're on the ice, always be giving out bad information.
Right. Like,
always give out bad info.
I sat on the bus, on the Marlies bus beside Brooks Like one day, and he brought his laptop and sat beside me to show me the Washington Capitals power play video from when he played there. It was a really cool experience. Hmm. And he showed me how Mike Green was so essential in making Alex Ovechkin as successful as he was. And obviously Nick Backstrom is a great passer too, but he talked about, like, watch Green's hands. Like, everyone knows Ovechkin's going to shoot, and everyone knows he's the guy, but, like, Green was so good at giving out bad information, you thought he might just run it back down to Backstrom before they went over there, or you thought he might actually sift this one on net. But because of his hand position, you know, it opened up stuff for Ovi. There's just Morgan Riley's telling the truth. He is telling the absolute God's honest Abe Lincoln truth. Every time he's got the puck, it feels like skating up the ice, looking at guys he's passing to, hanging on to it and dusting it off. It's just he's not making anything any easier on any of the talented forwards on the Leafs power play.
So we're going to talk today a lot about Sheldon Keefe. You worked with him with the Marlies. You know him a lot better than I do. So I want to ask you about William Nylander here in a second. But as it relates to the power play, how would the conversation be going right now between Sheldon Keefe and Manny Malhotra?
Well, it's tense. It's really tense. You know, I remember plenty of times A.J. McLean ran the power play in the American League, and obviously we had all that talent and a very good power play, but there were stretches, like with any power play, where it doesn't go well, and that's the thing the coach is responsible for. And when it goes bad long enough, the head coach looks at you and goes, hey, can you do your job or what? Like, do I need to step in and start making some decisions, or do you have a handle on this? And, you know, the Leafs are certainly on a run where, you know, as much as Malhotra is new to the Leafs staff, and I'm sure there's a feeling out process, you reach a point where Sheldon doesn't care and he just wants results. And I think that at the end of the day is something that NHL coaches don't have the luxury of going, oh, the process is fine. The process is fine. They got to get results or they get fired. So I think it gets really tense when he would step into the room and look at Malhotra and go, what's going on here? And even though they scored the other night, I still think it's probably been tense the last little bit over the power play.
Okay, so let's stay with Keefe here. And as of right now, we don't know whether William Nylander is going to be in the lineup tonight for the Maple Leafs. We don't know about Leah Mikheyev, who came out on the ice yesterday and left as promptly as he entered. We don't know what's happening there. We do know the Maple Leafs have lost four games in a row. Sunday was a difficult one for Toronto. Great for the Vancouver Canucks. What a story. Full credit specifically to the netminder. I mean, holy smokes. That was, I mean, Braden Holtby, what a performance. But As for tonight, so William Nylander is late for a meeting. Don't know if he's going to be scratched. How much of an A default setting is that for this coach? You're late for a meeting. You're sitting down the next game, regardless of who you are. And B, you've already lost Hyman. We'll get to that in a second with the sprained MCL. Don't know about Mikheyev. You've lost four games in a row. Are these mitigating factors for the coach?
Mm-hmm. Well, I don't know necessarily that late for a meeting, healthy scratch is something that I'd seen with him in the past. I do wonder, you know, like what kind of late are we talking, right? Like there's showed up 5 minutes late, huffing and puffing because he was in traffic. And then there showed up 35 minutes late with a Starbucks in your hand and booze on your breath. You know, like it's there's different types of late. So this seems like it didn't go over well. What's such a bummer for Nylander is like, was there a better player on the ice on Sunday night than William Nylander? He played 21 minutes for a guy who usually plays 16. The coach loved him. And then, man, like every time he gets comfortable, it's just... Yeah, I don't know. Maybe it's just bad luck, but I don't know.
Like, I'm always curious because the coach will want one thing. Sometimes players will want something else. Like in a situation like this, and again, asking you to wide brush this, but in a situation like this, what would the players want? Would the players want the instant accountability and you need to sit down and think about being late, young man? Or did the players say, you know, we've lost four games in a row here?
Yeah, don't punish the team.
Right? So what's the default setting there?
I got to believe it's don't punish the team. You know, I had a couple of texts back and forth with Colby Armstrong on this, where he was just, you know, that's not fair to the boys necessarily to punish the team in a position where you're fighting for points and every point still matters.
The coach would say, I'm not punishing the team. He's punishing the team.
Yeah. Yeah, well, coaches are hustlers with their language, aren't they? I get your point, though. Like, hey, I didn't make them late, you know?
Yeah.
And I do think there is a ton of value in, holding guys accountable, and it doesn't matter who you are, it doesn't matter the situation, you know, you're still accountable. I understand all that. So I'm fine with either way you want to go on this. But Colby and I were just saying, like, you know, fines hurt. I guess maybe he makes enough money that they can't fine him all that much and maybe not enough to make a difference. But it's an unfortunate circumstance in a situation where they need players right now, and Willie played so well Sunday.
You know, I didn't get your thoughts because technology was our enemy yesterday. I didn't get your thoughts on what we saw on Sunday. You know, Stewie and I went over it and CJ dropped by briefly because he had the same issues that you did. But what were your thoughts on what happened on Sunday? I know people were quick to compare it to the David Ayers game, which I don't even think they're apples and oranges. I think it's chalk and cheese how different the two scenarios are. But how did you see Sunday?
I'm not the David Ayers game. Like, I thought it was bad. I thought it was bad that, you know, you didn't take care of business on a team that was happy to get through the game, more or less, and not even sure how they were going to feel and look. But I'd feel worse about it. You know, the David Ayers game, they played like garbage. Like, it was a bad game, bad performance. Like, Carolina locked it down, and they just kind of rolled over. That was not this. They had 81 shot attempts on Braden Holtby. That was the most the Canucks have given up in a game this season. You know, by every metric, they absolutely thumped Vancouver. So, you know, Braden Holtby made a ton of saves. They hit the inside of posts. I don't think it's the Ayers game at all. I think it was a great performance by the Canucks, and I'm a lot quicker to stand up and give them applause than I am tear the Leafs down for that night.
Zach Hyman and Alex Edler gets two games for kneeing. Really dodged a bullet here in a lot of ways with the sprained MCL, out for a minimum 2 weeks. But this one could have been way worse. This one could have been a disaster. But what does it mean short term now for Toronto?
Well, it means some players are going to get some looks. I actually don't know that it's terrible, just in terms of what it's going to do to moving guys around in the roster. And Nick Robertson's going to get an extended run of play. It's probably good, too, for Nick Foligno, that he'll play probably more minutes and get lots of opportunity. It's not good to lose a guy to injury. But he's a guy who plays a lot of minutes on a team, and he's so important. That 2 weeks of rest here, well, he lets his knee rest. Probably good for the rest of his body parts, too. He's still going to get in 5-6 games before the playoffs. It's a really good outcome for the Leafs on something that looked really potentially bad.
You know, we've talked about this a couple of different times, the need, and sometimes you get forced into it, and this is one of those situations, for players to learn how to play with different line mates. Like, right now it's a league where we don't so much get complete lines, and we think about, you know, the perfection line is Boston as a touchstone for it, as much as you get pairs. And then there's a rotation, there's almost a revolving door in that third spot. If you're a team that plans to do something in the playoffs, injuries are going to be a reality that you are going to face. So even though you don't want it to happen this way, to your sort of point about this could actually be a good thing in some ways, does this not just force a lot of people to learn how to play with a bunch of other people here?
Yeah, and actually it looks like they started to do that game anyway. Sheldon Keefe swapped the D pairs around, so you know their top four would get a chance to play with one another. It's impossible to know what you're going to have to deal with come playoffs. The Leafs are by no means in a 100% locked in spot, but they do have a little bit of wiggle room to try some things, try some pairs, you know, try younger guys on the top six and all that. And I think that's something that Keefe appreciates and is taking advantage of here. So it's not the end of the day or end of the world here, but as long as they get some wins, as long as you win a couple hockey games doing it, you don't feel too bad about it.
So, as we were mentioning, Sunday was just such a glorious day for Vancouver, for the Vancouver Canucks yes. organization, for all those players, specifically Braden Holtby, Bo Horvat, Hamonic was real good, Myers was real good, specifically on that last
Myers
play.
Myers 30 minutes.
I know, right? And that, I'll tell you what, like, I know regroups aren't always sexy, and that's why we don't talk about regroups a whole lot, but that regroup in overtime by Myers was so effective, and it drew Jake Muzzin out, and it sprung Bo Horvat, and a real smart play made by someone that really hears it a lot from a negative point of view in Vancouver, and that's Tyler Myers. So that was Vancouver on Sunday. So you're the Maple Leafs, and you're back in the room. Yeah, we picked up a point, but you would imagine that the entire team is pretty steamed and pretty cheesed, and one of the things that a lot of people said, and I'm sure might have been mentioned to one or two Maple Leafs players after that game, is where's the killer instinct? Yeah. Where's the we have to snuff them out? So if you're on that team today, Justin, before tonight's game, right, puck dropping at Rogers Arena just after 9 o'clock Eastern, how much in your head are you thinking, this better be a demonstration of killer instinct? This just can't be we're going to play 50-50 and see what happens with the special teams. This has to be, like, if you're a Maple Leaf player, does this not need to be, you know, desperation game 7 style intensity from the hop? Even if just for no other reason, to prove it to your team and prove it to your coaching staff and your organization.
Yeah, I think so much of this is about proving it to your team. You know, forget all the noise outside the dressing room, but just, like, this team has developed a bit of a reputation over the past handful of years and maybe beyond that of being a talented group with a bit of a penchant for being a punchline. You know, the David Ayers game, but also just all the playoff series, going to 7 with the, you know, all the hype that comes with the Toronto media and all that and failing in the biggest moments. You know, I think you need to prove to themselves that, like, you know, they can handle these situations and take care of business when they're supposed to take care of business. Because let's face it, that's what playoffs are going to be. You know, whoever it is they play, and it looks like a Montreal team that is not playing well, I'll go ahead and say they're playing really bad, that's going to be the case. Can you take care of business when you're supposed to? And that's going to be tonight and likely the first round.
Let's get there then. So the Leafs face off against the Vancouver Canucks tonight. Rogers Arena just after 9 o'clock. The puck will drop. Pre-game on Sportsnet gets underway at 8:30 with Hockey Central. About Montreal, now we know they only have one more call-up. And if you're Marc Bergevin, it's kind of a tricky one because as everyone screams for Cole Caulfield to come up and the Habs can't score, they were snuffed out last night by an Oilers squad who, you know, as much as it's a 4-1 game and we'll focus on McDavid and the goal and 2 assists and that highlight for the second goal, etc. Like defensively, Edmonton played really well. And really lock things down last night against the Montreal Canadiens. So as much as Montreal fans may be screaming for, you got to call up Cole Caulfield. I don't care if you only have the one left. You got to use it on Cole Caulfield. this is still a kid. Like, I know there is some history of 20-year-olds coming in and, you know, doing things in the NHL, and it happens more and more than we've seen in years previous. But after all you've been through, you're Mark Bergevin. How do you just roll the dice and say, I know you've only played a handful of games in Laval, kid, but now we're going to pin a lot of playoff hopes on you?
Well,
what do you think about Montreal right now?
For me, it's like they can't score goals, and they have a guy who scores goals waiting. And I understand it's not as easy as that.
He scored a lot of goals playing for Wisconsin.
Yes, he did.
Had a Hobie Baker season for the ages. Yes. Has scored with Laval. Yes. But, you know, this is Capital City. This isn't Springfield here.
I don't know. If there's a guy at your local municipal course who's getting around in six under par every week, I'd like to see him play on the big courses too. You know, let's see what he's got here. See if this is legit. The kid is not going to suffer from the experience, and the team is going to need him. You just got to see. Like, you mentioned that Edmonton played well last night, but, like, who are they shutting down? Who are the offensive players? I said this going into the playoffs, and I was an outlier on this show saying I thought they might be fourth or fifth in the division, because how are they any better offensively this year? They couldn't score last year. They can't score. Yeah. Josh Anderson helping. You know, yes, he's a good offensive player. Toffoli, too. But these are, I don't know, these are not the elite of the elite offensive players in the leagues. Jonathan Drouin has not panned out to be the offensive juggernaut many of us expected him to be. Who are they shutting down right now? You just got to see if Caulfield can do it.
I'll tell you what, you really got roasted over that.
I did.
But you know what? It must feel really good knowing that all those people tweeted their apologies back to you.
That's where I find my redemption, Jeff, is just the humble Twitter people walking it back. Yeah.
It's not just an echo chamber for jerks. No. People are actually very level-headed about it.
Right.
Also in last night's game, so Edmonton wins 4-1. McDavid, one goal, two assists. The second one was just like your classic McDavid. Splits open Petrie and Edmondson.
He's a ghost.
And then scores. Oilers have played well lately. 5-1-1 in their last seven. Montreal, not so much. Losers of three of their last four. Now, they're still 6 points clear of the Calgary Flames with games in hand. Calgary can't gain any ground. Last night wasn't great. They lose 4-2 to the Ottawa Senators. More on the Flames in a second. How much of a flashpoint was the end of the first, or sorry, the beginning of the second, where Carey Price doesn't come out, but Jake Allen does?
Well, I don't know, but do we have any answers on that, Jeff? Like, you know, upper body.
That's it. Yeah.
So there was the goal that was disallowed there, where Chiasson clipped him in the head neck area, and it was reminiscent of a hit that Freddie Anderson took on a concussion, right?
That's what they're sort of looking at. I know he caught a shot high after that as well.
He did,
But there was shot. I think everyone's just sort of looking at the Alex Chiasson bump.
Yeah, and then there's COVID protocols. There's his old injury that was lingering. There's sometimes you get a tummy ache, as Roberto Luongo will attest. So tough to know exactly what's going on, but I guess it seems like that head could have been a precautionary thing, hopefully, for him.
Mm-hmm. The Habs are hanging on to that final playoff spot in the North. Now, Friday's going to be fascinating. I know we got to get there still, but Friday's going to be fascinating. Because starting Friday, Montreal and Calgary, separated by 6 points, play each other 3 times in 4 days.
Yeah.
So, like, that's big it. Like, that's the Flames season right there.
Yeah,
That's just it right there. I know we've been talking about going back to last Wednesday, the beginning of an opportunity. Here's the path before you. Do you want it? You know, snatch the pebble, grasshopper. Only then may you leave the temple. Here's the way you can do it if you're Calgary. And they seem to be, how should we say this generally, roller skating down a gravel road on route to trying to make the playoffs.
Yeah, that is a great metaphor. That is exactly what's happening. It's like you can see the path ahead. Just roller skate down it.
Just roller skate. Oh, where all this gravel come from? Why am I? Yeah. Well, wait a minute. Hold on a second here. Yeah. That's kind of what it feels like. They're roller skating down a gravel road.
They are. They have 11 games left in the season, and they're 6 points behind the Canadiens. if they are sitting here after the next three games tied with the Canadiens and just two games behind them in the games played category, you might feel a little bit differently about the situation that maybe they can't catch them. So I'm not going to, you know, officially declare them dead or anything because they can win these three hockey games. But Calgary is, like, at every turn, disappointing this season. Anytime you talk yourself into the Flames, they disappoint you. I just can't let myself talk myself into the Flames beating the Canadiens three straight times coming up.
You know who that team was for so long for everybody, and I always bid on it?
Was it Toronto?
San Jose Sharks.
Yes, absolutely.
How many times, everyone listening right now, just think to yourself, how many times have I been burned by the San Jose Sharks? Like, this is back, like, in the height of their powers, right? How many times were you burned by the San Jose Sharks? I know I bit too many times.
There
for
are
my
many
own
an
day.
Analyst who picked them to win the cup for half a decade in a row.
I did so many times. It's so embarrassing. And then when they weren't expected to, they make the final. So Ottawa beats Calgary Flames, doubles them up 4-2 last night. Connor Brown again. He's channeling the ghost of Rocket Richard. I don't know what it is. Ottawa 6-2 against the Flames this season. Josh Norris continues to perform. 8 points in five games, 26 saves for Matt Murray. Again, I know it's a lost season for the Ottawa Senators, but everything is based on expectations, right? Mm-hmm. Like, we all expected Detroit to be bad. We all expected Ottawa to be bad. We didn't expect Columbus to be bad, or at least this bad, but there they are, neck and neck, the bottom of the division with the Detroit Red Wings. What do you make of what you're seeing in Ottawa right now? Because they just did it again to Calgary.
Well, every team, when they're bad, looks at their prospects and tells themselves they're just around the corner from being good. And then those prospects all have to actually get good. You know, and I've long been in the camp that give me the guy who has already turned the corner into an NHL player than the guy who you think might someday. And this is about a bigger conversation about how we look at prospects. I remember a prominent analysis in Toronto listing the top prospects the Leafs had when I was there, and Kasperi Kapanen had already come up and played for the Leafs, and the list had Bracco on top. And I was like, no, give, you know, that's absolutely not wrong. Like, the guy who can play is the one you want. The guy who you know can play instead of the guy you think might be able to. The Ottawa Senators are proving that they have guys who can play, and that is extremely promising. These aren't just names anymore. Josh Norris can play and make a difference at an NHL level. Drake Batherson can play and contribute at an NHL level. Connor Brown's an important part of, you know, one of those different role guys on a team. They have guys, man. Stutzla can score. They have guys. These aren't players who might turn into something. They're players now. And so I like the odds of the Senators actually turning things around in the years ahead.
You know who hates hearing about prospects? Like, hates hearing about prospects? Coaches. Coaches. Yeah. Coach. I remember when we used to work with Doug McLean, he would always just laugh. You know, I'd go down the green banana list of, like, here are the guys that are coming. Here's this guy's coming and that guy's coming. And he would just be like, listen, I'm a coach in the NHL. I don't care about any of that. Yeah. Every team has prospects. Every team has 8 or 9 can't miss guys until they miss. Don't give me that. Don't give me your green banana list. Give me players.
And if none of them, and if even one or two of the guys you think are going to turn into players don't, all of a sudden it's really thin. Like, I just remember looking at the Anaheim Ducks 2-3 years ago. People are like, they got Sam Steele on the way, and, you know, Maxime Comtois,
yeah. Isaac Lindstrom, and
you know, these list of names that people are like, you just wait. I'm like, okay, those guys are NHL players now. They're good. So what? Every team has good players. So what else you got? You know, like, you need either a whole horde of good prospects or some truly elite ones to make a difference.
And you have to have a great program for them to go to as well. Like, part of the equation here is not just like, okay, you've drafted them. Okay, good job. You identified and brought them into your organization. Now what? That's the part that we never talk about, too.
Yeah, what's
the
next?
Development of a lot of these guys. Because we've seen teams just ruin careers.
Yes.
Of young, can't-miss guys. And others, like, oh, okay, you know what? You may have got him in the third or fourth round, but you stuck him with your American Hockey League team, and because the program there is so great, or the coaching, the situation, whatever, all of a sudden this guy's 10-year NHLer. Speaking of time in the NHL, I do want to mention this before we get to Mike McKenna, and we'll pick up the conversation with Mike McKenna on the other side. 1,768 mm-hmm. games for Patrick Marleau in the NHL. I'm not going to try to bias you by leading you on with a question here, which has my opinions, you know, carefully, you know, snuck into it. So I'm just going to say, Patrick Marleau, 1,768 games. Justin, your thoughts?
Put him in the Hall of Fame. That's my hot take, and I know it's not a wildly popular one. I just, that to me is such an unbelievable accomplishment. So many things have to go well. You have to be lucky and healthy. You have to be committed and in love with the game and in a good spot and hyper-talented. And like, you look at the stats in this guy's career now. He's played with something like, or played a game again, something like 37 or 38% of all the players who've ever played in the NHL in the history of hockey. Yeah. You know, like, he has been a part of the fabric of the sport. The game has loved him back. You know, when he's been a low-line player the last handful of years, teams have found room for him because he's not just a player. He's a special guy and can make a difference to a team. He's, you know, you've seen him crying in interviews lately. Like, it's yep. an unbelievable accomplishment, and I think, you know, it says a lot about the person, not just the player.
You know, it's interesting. You mentioned crying in interviews, and you know, Drew Remenda, the great Drew Remenda. And by the way, no one does a tie better than Drew Remenda. Just as an aside, so Drew Remenda asks him, you know, what keeps you coming back to the rink? And he starts crying. The thing that I think that's interesting, because, and you'll know this a lot better than I will. Hockey, any sport really, but for the purposes of this. Hockey gives you so many opportunities and chances and reasons to quit. To quit. To pack it in and say, that's it, I'm done. And there are a lot of players that reach a point where this is just a job. Like, we've talked about this before. You know, if you poll, you know, 700 players in the NHL and ask them, how, you know, do you still love hockey? I think the answers you'll get back would be pretty shocking to casual or hardcore hockey fans. I really do.
You got to ask them 4 or 5 beers deep in the bar off the record, but yeah, those answers are real.
You'd get some real answers. But to your original point, like, to get to that number, you really have to love it, because you've been given every single opportunity to quit. And listen, he's not doing it for the money at this point. This guy's, you know, his $5 million a year, you know, days are gone. Like, that's mm-hmm. not happening for Patrick Marleau anymore.
Must really dislike his family.
I'm impressed because, what's that?
That was terrible. That was terrible. I just said he must really dislike his family. It's just so hard. It's so hard to be away from your family that much. They're the most supportive group, the Marleaus, and I think it's awesome that they rally behind him, and they're such a great supportive family. So
I want to pick up the conversation about longevity with Mike McKenna here in a second, and it's always one of those things that players talk about. That guy played 600 games. That guy played 850. That guy played 1,200. Like, it really is a badge that guys wear. Vegas Golden Knights analyst Mike McKenna joins us next. We will talk about Vegas, but we'll pick up the conversation a little bit more about Patrick Marleau. Don't forget, tonight, Maple Leafs facing off against the Vancouver Canucks. We'll see what type of bounce back we get from Austin Matthews and company. Pre-game on Sportsnet at 8:30 Eastern. Puck drops in Vancouver just after 9. Hockey Central continues. Sportsnet 590 The Fan. Welcome back to the program here Monday to Friday starting at noon on Sportsnet 590 The Fan. This is Hockey Central. Jeff Merrick alongside Justin Bourne. And Bourne, our next guest, I'm really looking forward to talking to. He has quickly distinguished himself as one of the best analysts in the game. And that should really come as no surprise. If you've heard him on radio or seen him on TV before, he took over the one of the analyst chairs with the Vegas Golden Knights. He is Mike McKenna, and he joins us now. Mike, how are you today?
I feel amazing after that introduction. Wow, I've done four games in 4 days. My voice isn't working great, and now I got all kinds of energy thanks to you, Jeff. I appreciate it.
That's just now that I'm just reading the text that you sent me. Like, did I read it well enough for you? Like, I wasn't word for word. I kind of freestyled it a little bit, but I sort of got to the gist of the whole thing, right, Mike?
I'm, you know, I included some things that I thought really would have brought up great context, but if you chose to delete them, that's fine. Yes. I do appreciate the abbreviated version, though.
He is he has Dick Tracy-like good looks, and his eyes are a blue, azure, deep summer sky. Is that what I sort of left out on that one there? But we'll get into the hockey talk here. Listen, Mike, before we get to the Vegas Golden Knights, I want to talk about Patrick Marleau with you for a couple of moments. Justin and I were just talking about, you know, the nature of longevity and how much, you know, players value, like of all the stats that players value and talk about, one of the things that I've learned from being in and around the game and working in it is how much value players, okay, so this is like amongst your colleagues and your peer group, how much value players put in how many games you've played. Like, oh, that guy played 1,000 games. That guy played 1,200. That guy played 800 games. Like, that really is a badge that players wear, true or false?
Oh, 100%.
All the games.
Yeah. And you know what? It's just, there's so many things that go into it. You know, it's not just the longevity of it, but it's the durability. Like, how do you maintain your body to play that many games in a row? How do you play through things? Because you cannot play 1,000 games in the league or 1,700 plus like Patrick Marleau did and is doing without taking care of yourself and without being able to, in the game, know the moments that might put you at risk and be able to avoid those. And guys, think about like Nick Lidstrom. What did we always hear about him? He never gets hit. Well, it's not a coincidence. You know, these types of players have such a great game feel that the way they play, the intelligence that they play with lends itself to it. But ultimately, you've got to be a warrior because you know there's been moments where there's been tweaks and strains. And I think of my own career, I mean, I played in, you know, two Calder Cup finals where I'd pulled my groin and it wasn't public knowledge, but I wasn't coming out of the net, you know, put the needles in my groin and hook it up to the electrodes and get me ready. I'm going back. And there's just so much respect around the league for players that can one perform at that level for that long of a time and can power through things and make a career out of it.
So let me, I want to hand this to Justin in a second, but you sort of got me thinking about one thing that we just talked about a second ago, and it's the idea of loving the game and doing whatever it takes to stay in the game. This game gives you a lot of opportunity to pack it in. And at a certain point for a lot of players, and maybe even it's before you hit the NHL, you sort of fall out of love with it and it just becomes a job. And then eventually you don't like it, but this is what you do, damn it. So you just keep on doing it. One of the things that's impressive about Marleau, I think, is how he seems to still really love playing the game. But Justin and I were just throwing this around a couple of minutes ago. If we interviewed everybody in the NHL candidly and said, do you still love hockey? What percentage back would say yes, do you figure?
3/4, maybe. I don't know what number you guys would come up with, but I mean, without question, you're making a ton of money in the NHL. And it gets to a point where it's your best source of income. And like I'll give you a great example in my career. I mean, my last season, I spent the most amount of time in the National Hockey League than I ever did, right? About 3/4 of the year, was up for a lot of it. And it was actually miserable for me being away from my family and being traded and waived and moved all around. But, you know, one, I signed a contract and it was my job and I was going to finish it. But two, there's a lot of money. Got me a house, got me a car. You know, it's you look at those type of things and it's real, right? Like the monetary value is something that you take into account. And I mean, I know one player that's had an incredible NHL career and I can remember him in, I mean, 23, 24 sitting in summer hockey going, oh, I hate hockey. And he's been unbelievable his whole career. So, <Yeah. laughs> you know, we can all put that face on in public at times. And don't get me wrong, even the players that maybe aren't truly in love with hockey, they still find enjoyment out of aspects. It may not be the playing part of the game. Maybe it's the locker room. Maybe they just enjoy having that time with the guys. Maybe they enjoy being able to go on the road when things were normal, at least. You know, you can find pockets of enjoyment that maybe aren't necessarily directly related to what's happening on the ice and the grind that takes place to get there. But there's definitely guys that are just cashing a check, but you'll never hear that publicly.
No, that's certainly a very real element of it. A couple of guys who probably aren't. One guy in particular who definitely isn't just cashing a check is Marc-Andre Fleury. Happy guy, loves hockey, no bones about that. And then another interesting goaltender there, Robin Leonard. It makes sense for you to tell us about what's going on in Vegas's crease. It looks like they have two of the league's best goaltenders. How are they going to manage that the rest of the way? And just tell us about the situation there in net.
Well, I think it's going to play itself out, really. You know, the season started off, it was a direct rotation, and Fleury had the upper hand at the beginning of the year in terms of the statistics, but Leonard just kept winning, and he still continued to just win games. And, you know, I think when people watch Robin Leonard, they see a big guy in the net who maybe doesn't move as gracefully as other people, but he gets it done. And he doesn't get respect around the goalie community for it. It's funny, if you pull goaltenders, they won't put him at the top, the pointy end of the list. But when you look at his stats, when you look at his wins, he's always there. So, you know, Leonard goes down with a concussion. He misses a bunch of time, and Fleury takes over. And you look at the advanced metrics, his saves above expected are top three in the league. And Vasilevsky, Grubauer, Fleury, ironically, three of the best teams in the league had the best goaltenders. That goes hand in hand. It's not that those guys aren't facing good opportunities. They're facing good shots, and they're performing above. So Fleury carried the ball. And then all the questions were, well, how is Robin Leonard going to respond? One, coming back to a team that has Marc-Andre Fleury playing out of his mind. And how is he going to respond coming back from a concussion? That's not easy to do. Well, Leonard comes back, and he's better than at the start of the year. So, you know, I think if Leonard had come back and struggled, you'd see Fleury continue to carry the mail and play the bulk of the games. But now they're right back into a rotation. Pete DeBoer loves having a fresh goaltender every night. He thinks that's an advantage for the team, especially with the condensed schedule. And it's playing out. They're both playing very well. They're riffing off one another. You can see them, you know, talking to each other at the bench, Fleury and Leonard, that is, enjoying the game. And I think that going into playoffs, who knows what's going to happen? Either of these goaltenders, I think, are capable of winning a Stanley Cup for the team. I don't know how it's going to play out. I think you might see both of them in playoffs at times. We saw it in the bubble last year. It's a very interesting, we can talk about ad nauseum, but I think down the stretch especially, they're both going to play and they're both going to have an opportunity at some point to carry the team.
You know, there's a lot of players. We're talking to Mike McKenna, analyst for the Vegas Golden Knights. There's a lot of players on this team where the secret is out. Like, there's no longer can you hide the fact that Jonathan Marchessault is a real good player or Mark Stone is amongst the elite in the NHL. Like, no one's really getting hidden in Vegas, right? Like, it is like people watch Vegas hockey games. But who do you think we're all missing on? I mean, you watch them, you see them practice, you're all the games. Who do you think we're missing on? Who's the one person you say, how do you guys not talk more about blank?
Well, it's not me saying it. It's the entire team. It's Alec Martinez. What he has done for the defensive core and for the entire outlook of the Vegas Golden Knights, the guy's just a warrior. Like, you'll hear him in post-game scrums when he's up talking. And you know how weird the world is with Zoom now, guys. Like, you've got players in the background yelling and, you know, trying to distract the guy on the Zoom call. Well, they're chanting, warrior, warrior, warrior. And you're waiting for the ultimate warrior to come out in, like, neon tassels and run across the middle of the screen. And, well, why is that? Because Alec Martinez is leading the league in block shots. He's on a career pace in points. He's got 25 points in 44 games, right? Now, yes, he's playing with Shea Theodore, but he is, and at times, he's moved around. He's played with Petrangelo. He's played with Theodore. But he drives them. Like, he gives them the confidence to go because he's so steady. And he's just such an intelligent player. I think he's so respected in that locker room, and especially coming into his first full season with the team now, that's when you start to see the leadership aspect play in. And he's a direct lieutenant to Mark Stone. And I think you always look for heart and soul guys on the team that are really – bring the heartbeat to it. And, you know, the easy answer to me is Alex Tuch, right? 16 goals, 44 points, sure. And he's kind of under the radar because he plays third line. But I think, to me, the most consistent player who's brought so much to the team is Martinez. He's been incredible for him.
It just seems absolutely inevitable that Vegas and Colorado are going to have a second round matchup to go to the semifinals on the route to the Stanley Cup path. How do you like how they stack up Vegas against Colorado? And I guess just as an aside, to if I am wrong here, is there any other team that can stop that from happening in that division?
Well, yeah, Minnesota's in that mix for sure. Where they are in terms of the standing sometimes isn't really indicative of how they've played teams. I mean, Minnesota's strong, and they play hard, and they're dangerous. You look at what Kaprizov's done to that entire team. That was their biggest addition, and you can see why Billy Guerin stood pat at the deadline. He liked this team. He liked the trajectory of it. Minnesota's 5 points back of Colorado. They're 7 points back of Vegas. But those games against Vegas, they're the only team that they've been able to stymie them and get wins. And you know, Colorado, same way. Those have been really, really good games. They've been exciting up and down the ice between Colorado and Vegas. That's a series that's built to go seven games, if you ask me. You factor in the Grubauer aspect, provided that he comes back from COVID and is able to play and is healthy and as strong as he's been previously against the Vegas goaltending. Because, you know, we always talk goaltending in playoffs. Well, I think both these teams are pretty set now. I think picking up Dubnyk was a smart move for Colorado. He's had two down seasons, but players, and I mean forwards and defensemen, they really don't know much about goalies. They don't know their current stat. They don't know why the goalies have had down seasons. They know the reputation of goalies. And picking up Devan Dubnyk's a mental boost to that team. It gives them confidence that if Grubauer's not ready, they have somebody with experience. So those two clubs, Colorado, Vegas, I mean, it's going to be a matchup of the heavyweights because everybody in the West has been targeting them all along. They've been close games. They've been exciting games. And there's just really, guys, there's just so much star power that makes it intriguing.
Like that is the matchup that I think everybody wants. Having said that, mm-hmm. I still think the best games, Mike, that I have seen this season in any division is Vegas, Minnesota that you just mentioned there a couple of seconds ago. Those to me have been the best games I've seen all year.
And you know why? It's because Minnesota can play heavy. And that's something that Vegas can do. Vegas can play just about any type of game you want. They are on a seven-game win streak right now, and they've done it without Ryan Reeves in the lineup for most of that. They've done it without Keegan Kolesar, who isn't a household name right now, but this is a guy who plays heavy. He creates space for teammates. He takes a little bit of that burden off of Reeves. They've both been out of the lineup, and Vegas keeps winning. You know, and when they go into play teams like a Minnesota who forechecks hard, who have players like Greenway that can really, you know, grind down low, Foligno, and then they've got speed. You've got Kaprizov and Zuccarello and Fiala, these guys that can really, really skate. Like, to me, they're both diverse teams in how they can win games. And when Minnesota gave Vegas fits, it's because they forechecked so hard and they put pressure on the Vegas D and they didn't allow the Golden Knights to break out as quickly as they like to. And that's the biggest strength of the Golden Knights. Get in the D's hands, get it up to the forwards as quick as possible, get things going north. And Minnesota's been the best team that Vegas has faced this year at stopping that.
So how has Petrangelo played into things this year on the back end for Vegas? He's playing almost 25 minutes a game, but we had Gary Lawless on a couple weeks back, and he was a little hesitant in his review, and maybe I misread Gary there, but in terms of praise of Petrangelo's debut season with the Golden Knights.
Well, I think Petro has been largely, he's been good. You know,
I know. That's kind of the review. Right? It's like, yeah, it's good.
We set the bar so high sometimes, right? Yeah. Like, oh, he's a top five D in the league, and he should be a Norris candidate every year. And let's factor in the fact that this guy spent 12 years in one organization and came to a new one, right? And you've got completely different systems. Vegas loves to use the walls on the breakout. St. Louis likes to use the middle. Different things. And Petrangelo's a one-man breakout at times, and he's still shown that this year. I think as of late, he's really started to round into himself. Scored two goals in his last four games. The offensive side started to come. I mean, he still has 14 points in 30 games. But the defensive side, the guy's plus 13. Like, he's done everything he needs to from a defensive standpoint to make the team better. And so often we just look at offensive numbers. And the Golden Knights needed a rounded defenseman. They needed somebody that could play in all situations. And that's what he's provided. And as his comfort level's gone up, with the team, with the systems, you can see it in his play. He looks like himself. He's an undercover nasty player, you know, with his stick. Like, he's got a little Chris Pronger to him. He's got a little edge and bite. You're seeing more of that. And he can dominate games and take over. And, you know, we haven't seen a game like that where he pots two power play goals and, you know, an assist or two as well. But he's been consistent. And he's really provided that extra layer of to Shea Theodore's game, like I said previously, and giving him confidence to do what he needs to, knowing that he's got another partner back in the line that can do similar things. They play well off of one another. It gives the team a nice 1-2 punch, and they're not as reliant on just Shea Theodore as they have to be. It's probably a relief for Alex Petrangelo to not have to be the number one guy at all times.
Those are excellent points. Mike, we're up against it. This has been great. Thanks so much for stopping by. This will be, by the way, tonight, a really interesting night for the Vegas Golden Knights, where you guys could actually clinch a playoff spot based on nothing that you do. The Ducks-Kings game could clinch it tonight for Vegas, officially, which would be the first in the NHL. Listen, thanks so much for stopping by. We'll catch up real soon. Continued success, Mike. Thanks for stopping by today.
Sounds great. Jeff, Justin, thanks, guys. Have a great day. Appreciate it.
Thanks, Mike.
The great Mike McKenna, one excellent reason, by the way, to watch Vegas Golden Knights hockey. We'll step away. I want to come back and talk a little bit more about Vegas, and we'll finish up on the Maple Leafs and the Vancouver Canucks as well. This is Hockey Central on Sportsnet 590 The Fan. We're back in a moment. So to put a final point on that last conversation with Mike about the Vegas Golden Knights, they clinch tonight, Justin, if Anaheim beats Los Angeles in any way, shape, or form. Then Vegas is in officially the first team to get there. The other interesting thing, and again, this is just how good hockey players are, just give them the environment. Who saw Chandler Stephenson as your number one center with one of the best teams in the NHL?
Yeah, I still think it kind of goes understated that Vegas does what Vegas does with, like, not a ton of huge names. Like, yes, they have a few great players, but, like, you know, all right, they have William Karlsson, or, like, you know, just Jonathan Marchessault. These aren't superstars. They're just a very deep team.
They are. Maple Leafs face off against Vancouver Canucks tonight. What are you looking for this evening, Justin?
Vancouver to hold on for dear life and hope to get lucky.
I got a date now, buddy, with my pal AstraZeneca. Wish me luck.
Oh, go get him.